Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing Burgle Bros, designed by Tim Fowers of Fugitive and Paperback. The artist is Virginia Critchfield and Ryan Goldsberry of Paperback, Fugitive, and Heiko Gunther of Glory to Rome, The Networks, and Can't Stop. And it is published by Fowers Games. The description is, Burgle Bros is a cooperative game for 1 to 4 players. Players are unique members of a crew trying to pull off a robbery of a high-security building without getting caught. The building has 3 floors, each with its own safe to crack. Players start on the first floor and have to escape to the helicopter waiting on the roof. The mechanics are action points, cooperative game, dice rolling, grid movement, map addition, modular board, multiple maps, solo solitaire, square grid, three-dimensional movement, and variable player powers. The box art is a bunch of little images of, I'm assuming, your thief team in kind of that cartoony art style.
Yeah, it's got the same theme as Fugitive, and the little art that was in Paperback, it has similar art to that, right. Which probably makes sense since Ryan Goldsberry did all of those. So it's the same type of art style. I'm hoping to enjoy it a little bit more in this game because I really liked cards in Fugitive, like told the story like comic book style.
Yeah, it reminds me of like those, you know, late 1960s, 70s cartoons. With the kind of triangular lines and things like that. Like you look at all their noses are all like these very pointed triangle shapes and they just all seem kind of like boxy, but I like the style as well. So
yeah. Who are the bad guys in Bullwinkle? Natasha and Boris and Natasha. Like that's kind of the vibe that I get. I don't think Bullwinkle and the squirrel have that kind of art, but like in that cartoon, Boris and Natasha have like a similar kind of more angular art style.
It's because they're evil Russians. shout out to the Russian listeners. Yeah. So based on all this, would you pull it off the shelf?
Yeah.
I put it into our list of games. Well, I think we kind of did it all together, but one of the reasons, like, because Eric and I put a bunch of Tim Fowers games on after we played Fugitive. And then when BP and I were out at the Labyrinth game, store, shout out to the Labyrinth, one of their employees recommended Burgle Brothers but said it was best at 3 players, so we didn't buy it because of that, but he made it sound really fun.
All right, so we would pull it off of a shelf. Now, how do you think this box art compares to the Fugitive and Paperback boxes?
So the box cover looks more comic booky. But when you like the actual box itself, it's made to look like a like an office building, the way they have it designed and the way it stands up.
Right.
So it's very it goes into his whole theme of he likes to make the box look like he likes a thematic box.
Right. So the box, it's less about the art on the box and more of like the overall design of the box, I guess. I don't know what to call it. A little bit of both. Well, like I'm thinking, especially with the Fugitive, where it was just sort of briefcase,
right, and Paperback was a couple of books on a shelf.
Yeah, but there wasn't much art on Paperback either. It was just sort of the design of the box. All right, BP, how do we think it's played with all those mechanics? We're definitely putting tiled blocks down to make up floors.
I mean it does say, right, modular board, grid movement,
map addition. So you're going to be putting down Magic Maze style as you see them. Multiple maps. So there's multiple maps and they're three-dimensional and it's a square grid. So we know all about the map.
We're building the tower as we try to escape.
So you go in on the first floor, right? And you're going to do the floor and then you're going to add the next floor on it as you go. And you're going to pick a random tile.
Well, no, you're going to have to reveal something in order to get right to find the next floor. I mean, it's a heist. Like, I'm not assuming.
That's the question. What do you do on the first floor?
You roll dice. It says dice rolling.
Okay, so we're going to walk into the building. We're going to roll dice.
And we have variable player powers.
Okay, so when I roll a 1, what's going to happen?
It depends on what your powers are. I feel like this is going to go like Magic Maze almost, where like some of the things have certain powers that will allow them to kind of get through areas more fast.
So you think there's going to be obstacles?
Oh, it's a heist. Of course there are obstacles. You don't just walk into a museum, steal the, you know, most precious gem and walk right out. Like, all right, no. So
we don't need to discuss how it's played because it's already obvious and BP knows. So
yeah, it's like, duh, there's all these obstacles. We're going to have to like jump through lasers, figure out how to
lasers.
Reveal. Well, yeah, it's a heist, right?
It's full of lasers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I guess you have to have lasers in a heist.
Yeah. And we got to get to the roof to get to our helicopter, but we got to be able.
Right.
So
what is first we got to get
in. I don't know. We got to get in. We got to get to the gym. and then we got to find the gym.
We're getting a gem.
A gem.
Oh, a gym. I thought you said we got to get to the gym. And I was like, are you going to work out during your life?
I'm like, no. I mean, we are. We're going to have to climb the walls like Spider-Man. Okay, what are action points? This is where I'm thinking like.
Action points is like Pandemic, where you can do two actions in a round or something.
Well, so maybe that's what it is. Maybe like you roll a dice and like one, I don't know, allows you to unlock, to turn off the lasers. Okay. And then somebody else, like they roll a one and it allows them to do like a search, you know, like if you're a rogue or something, right? In D&D and you can do a search and depending on your search, you reveal hidden doors.
So we're going to have a card with our powers on it. And what we roll in the dice determines what power we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we're going to use that to get through obstacles to get to the gym.
Yeah. Like turning off lasers. I really now feel like somebody's going lasers. To have to design a board game with lasers.
Well, it's 3D, so there could be lasers in this game, like physical lasers on the board. The board could be made up of lasers.
It's all a hologram. It's Star Trek 3D chess. I tricked you guys.
All right, let's play this laser game.
Well, we got to find out about the history of laser heists first.
Yeah, you need to come up with a laser history now.
Right. So, like, at first I was just like, okay, like thievery, Burgle Brothers. And then I was like thinking about some of the early, I don't know if they were necessarily heists, so to speak, but one of the early, like, kind of ideas of robbing, I think, comes out in Greek mythology. And I was just remembering, especially, or Greek poetry, Odysseus and the Cyclops, where, right, he tricks them into, basically, they sneak out of the cave, like, with his sheep, and after they blind him and get him drunk and blind him and everything. But I was like, when you're reading through the description again and thinking more of a heist with, like, teamwork and, like, kind of high-end operations such as right a helicopter, it made me think of Ocean's 11. And naturally. So yeah, naturally. So I feel like the kind of the idea of that modern heist such as Ocean's 11 really has its roots in like the 20th century, and not just cinema but even books. And I think of like some of the spy novels and things that were super popular during the 1960s and 70s because of the Cold War and things like that. And so, I mean, I don't really have the history of the heist, but we could talk about Ocean's 11 and how, right?
How it was a remake? The original was made back in the 60s.
We're just going to go over the plot of Ocean's 11?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the Rat Pack.
Oh. Well, see, there you go. It all now comes together. This game is Ocean's 11. Who's going to be Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt was Frank Sinatra, right?
No, I think George Clooney was Sinatra's character, Danny Ocean.
Oh, right. Who? What did Brad Pitt do in that movie?
Brad Pitt was Rusty Ryan. He was like the sidekick guy. And that's a new character. Rusty Ryan wasn't a character in the first one. All right, well, you guys want to know? Well, I was going to say that... every time I hear Burgle Brothers, for whatever reason, I think Burger Brothers, which then makes me think of the video game Burger Time. which was like this really cheesy NES game that for whatever reason I really enjoyed. All right. So the game is played in a series of rounds consisting of each player taking a turn, and the game ends one of two ways. Either the characters all get to the roof after cracking each of the safes on each of the floors and possessing the loot they win. If at any point a player loses all of their stealth tokens and there are no stealth tokens remaining to take, then that character is arrested and immediately narcs on the whole team and the players lose.
Nice. We totally nailed this. Yeah. It's totally what we just said.
Mm-hmm. Stealth tokens, just like we said.
Here's a good first player mechanic based on our present reality. Who is the player who most recently took money out of the bank?
Oh my God.
Hit an ATM machine? So who was the last to get money out of the bank? I don't even remember the last time I got money out of the bank.
I'm going to say back in the fall of 2019.
Yeah, same.
Probably as accurate as I can get that.
BP is going first, according to Chwazi.
Okay.
All right. Play will then continue clockwise around the table. On your turn, you can do up to four actions, and your actions are peek at a tile, move to a tile, hack a computer, add a die to a safe, crack a safe. Peeking at a tile, so all the tiles are already laid out. They're going to be face down. We're going to be able to choose which tile that we start on the first floor. Peeking at a tile lets you look at the next tile without actually triggering any kind of alarms or anything like that in the next tile. Moving to the tile, if it's been revealed, obviously you already know what's there. If not, then you reveal it. And if you trigger alarms, you trigger alarms.
Are those your lasers? Computer.
There are several different types of alarms.
It's one of them lasers.
Yeah. Yeah, one of them is lasers.
Yes!
Yes. So we do have, so the three types of alarms are fingerprint, laser, and motion.
Nailed the rules.
So you can hack. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you can hack a computer, and then those computer hacking tokens can then be used to discard alarm tokens. You can attempt to add a die to a safe, and that's going to actually cost you two actions. And then you can try and crack a safe. So in order to crack the safe, we have to get the combination. And the combination is going to be all of the tiles have to be revealed in the row and column that the safe is in. And then the number of dice that are on the safe, you're going to roll those dice. If any of the dice match the values on any of those visible tiles, then we're going to put a crack token on them. And once we have crack tokens on all those tiles, we've cracked that safe and we get loot out of it.
Gems.
Yep. Gems.
Well, the loot can actually be tons of stuff. Some of the loot can help you and some of the loot won't help you. One of the loot cards from the rule book is a chihuahua who happens to bark while you're carrying it around the building, attracting guards to you.
Wow. Whose great idea was a chihuahua?
I'm gonna guess Tim Fowers.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, who's putting a chihuahua in the safe? That seems really bad.
It's really a crate. It's a crate with a padlock on it.
So if you crack the safe, you get a tool card, which you can use later. You get a loot card, which we need two loot cards to, and then get to the roof, obviously, to win. And then guards will gain a movement for the current floor you're on and all lower floors. Mm. And then if you don't crack the safe, you're going to return all the dice back to the safe tile. And then you can try again with a later action. So that's the first part of your turn. The second part is you're going to check for events. So if you did two or fewer actions, we're going to reveal a card from the event deck and follow its text. Some events are helpful. Some aren't. You can't avoid events by simply moving back and forth between tiles. So you'd have to do like legitimate actions. And then finally, we end the player's turn by moving the guard on the current floor. The guard only moves if there are players on that floor, and the guard is going to move every time a player finishes their turn. So one of the recommendations in the rule book is try to spread people out across the building, because then the guards move less because they're moving on all the different floors. The guard's movement speed is always the value shown on the guard die. The guard's destination is always the tile that contains the guard die. It's set by the patrol card revealed from the patrol deck, but alarms and events can move the die. So if an alarm goes off and we don't get it triggered, the guard changes his direction to that alarm, vice where his patrol route was taking him. The guard will always take the shortest route, and if there are multiple routes available, they'll go clockwise, starting to the guard's left. And they have the same movement restrictions as players, but they ignore special movement rules. So there's like deadbolts and walkways that will affect our movement, but they don't affect the guard's movement because obviously they have the keys to get through deadbolts. When a guard reaches their destination, we're going to draw a new patrol card. And if the guard has remaining movement, they'll continue on to their new destination. And if a guard is in the same tile as a player, that player must discard a stealth token to avoid detection. This could be good because alarms don't go off in tiles where the guard is. And we're going to start the game with each player having 3 stealth tokens. And then we're doing the starter scenario, which only has 2 floors. And those are all the rules.
Well, let's heist.
We just finished a game of Burgle Bros. To recap, we successfully burgled.
Bros?
Burgle Bros.
You don't say brothers?
He didn't when we started the episode either. Oh. He said Burgle Bros.
What's okay, the title?
Sorry, okay. Continue.
Hold on. What's the name of the game?
I thought bros was just short for Burgle brothers. Bros.
I mean, it's spelled it's spelled burger time. What's going on? It's spelled Burgle Bros, and there's a period at the end of bros.
Which means
that's the name of the game.
Which means it's short for Burgle Brothers.
Now I feel like I should have done the Surfer Bros like all the way through, dude.
We just finished the game of Burgle something.
Is it Camel Cup?
We successfully burgled.
I got a stamp. Kiwi got a BP got a gem.
I got my gem.
And I blew up walls and floors.
We got in the helicopter and flew away.
So what do we think of the theme?
Loved it. I love being a burglar. I think you guys know this. And obviously I got a gem. I had roller skates at one point. I felt like I was conducting a heist and hiding from guards.
Yeah, I thought the theme was pretty neat. It makes me want to play. What was the one that you got from Thunderwear? Locked Up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's we like haven't the got more to play that one. Yet.
That's significantly different.
Yeah, but the theme is similar, though. Well, no, not really. You're breaking out of prison.
It's more like prison gangs, and you're trying to make shivs and stuff to kind of get influence and stuff. So significantly different game. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was good. Like it's a realistic heist you've got, but it's kind of like a 70s kind of theme.
Yeah, like the foyers had it kept with the same art thematic thing, and I'm not to talk about
conversation pits.
Yeah, exactly. They're very popular in the late 60s, early 70s.
You know, it had the lasers and the fingerprint. It had all the classic movie heist things. So lived up to expectations.
Yep. Keypads. Yep.
I also thought it was really cool that I was like, I mean, I didn't talk to you guys about it before. I just kind of blew a hole in the wall to get the guard to come that direction. And I think that was a really cool mechanic. Yeah, I felt like the mechanics, I mean, skipping ahead a little bit here, but I thought the mechanics really went in well with the theme. Like yes. The two kind of really went well together. I mean, the basic mechanics, it's pandemic, right? You get 4 action points and here's the actions that you can do. But like the actions that you can do are so thematic.
Right. I was going to say, because
we didn't see all the tools. Like, I mean, maybe not the roller skates. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'd want to take roller skates and go rob an office building. But it's really fun. And I liked how it all went together. And I felt like we were actually pulling off a heist.
Yeah, I think the variable player action to name a mechanic if we are going ahead. Wow. Yeah, I think that really helped. We like having those characters that we can play and play into and play up onto kind of right in storytell. Like at one point we were like, all right, Eric, you got to describe your scene. Like, where are you hiding in this room? You know, like I think those are the things that we really enjoy as well, too. So.
And I think thematically, like that works for our group because that's just kind of our play style. Mm-hmm. And like other groups won't do that too. But I think for us,
it would still work.
Yeah. Like for us, it gave us the prompt to like tell the story, which is something that we look for in games, is being able to tell more story.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we kind of talked about it a little bit, but the art and components.
Yeah. I mean, they're cool. The cards, I mean, which is really where you're going to get the art from. But even the characters, right? It carries your tokens, carry on that same character that's on your card when you get your character, and it carries on that same like 60s, very angular style, right? Like all the legs seem very skinny and pointy. Kiwi being the guy, he looks like, right, kind of your typical almost, I feel like, 1970s kind of machismo character that's big on top but tiny on bottom. Yeah, they're just, I don't know, like the style is just very cool.
Yeah, I think graphic design wise, like it's laid out really well. Like you can even if you like stepped away from the table, you could see like the red does this, purple does this, you know, light blue does this. Like they all of them have like different things, but you know that, all right, with light blue, I'm going to get some kind of good thing.
Right. And then the art is actually black and white or grayscale. And so it makes the color stand out more, whereas it's not too busy.
And it
busy.
Doesn't distract from the rest of it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And everything's kind of we'll get to it with the rules. But first, mechanics, Kiwi.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of already talked about it before with the way the mechanics. I thought it was cool. Like, you know, we've talked about the other piece, how it fit thematically, but I liked the way that you cracked the safe.
Yeah, that was
you
interesting.
You had to find the combination and get the combination in the correct order. Same thing with like the keypad. Like the keypad was really just a roll. You had a 12.5% chance or 12.7 or whatever it is for 1/6. But you kept adding die. So it's like you kept trying to get the combination and eventually you did. And then like you radioed everybody like, hey, you know, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's the combo. So
that's
like
the kind of combo like an idiot would put on their suitcase.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So open the door and change the combination on my luggage immediately. Spaceballs the movie. I thought like it's just rolling dice, but the way they worked it in and it, way it worked into the story, like I didn't mind just kind of rolling dice over and over again because I felt like we were trying to crack the safe. Like we already knew the combination. We were just trying to figure out the order the numbers went in.
Right. And you're making progress as you roll. I also think like, yeah, again, exactly. It's like those clever mechanics of like, well, how do you make it so they don't just find the safe immediately and lock it? So having the row and column forces you to explore the map. Even if you get like, we got lucky on the first floor and had the safe, like the first thing we looked at. But, you know, we still had to kind of look around the whole place, which is smart.
And even on the second floor, like we started cracking the safe before we had unlocked everything. And it actually was a little bit detrimental because we had rolled a 5. One of them had a 5. And then the last tile that we revealed also had a 5. So we had to roll a 5 again. So you can start rolling early, but it might not always work out in your favor.
Right. BP, mechanics. What was your favorite mechanic?
Good for the, as I mentioned before, the variable player action. God, I could recall a mechanic. Where again, you get to fit your role. You have your special powers. And so I think as a cooperative, that always helps you incorporate other people because you need to be able to use their abilities, right, in order to achieve. And it gives, I don't know, it makes you work, I feel like, more together as a team because you want the people to do what they can do best, right?
Rules, BP, wording, and things.
Well, I think we started off, I was like, ugh, I was falling for a while, and then it seemed complicated. But I think, I almost like said this when he was reading through it, I was thinking it in my head. The way it was being explained was just, to me, one of those ones you have to play through. Right. To just get them and figure them out. But I think like, again, it really was like the first time through and we're like, OK, we got this. We understand how these things. And I know the online rule book seemed a little wonky, but I feel like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Kiwi can comment on that, but it seemed like it was pretty straightforward once we started doing the playthrough and we were able to address questions as they came up, which I feel like is good. Again, the cards were clear with like what you could or could not do. I think there was one point you had said, maybe I shouldn't have been spending as many actions doing something, but.
That was my player power. That's more because I didn't read it.
Yeah. Rulebook wise, like I'm not going to hit it for the PDF being kind of wonky because that's just right. The way the PDF is.
Right.
I think compared to, because I think my complaints about Fugitive and Paperback were both that the rulebook wasn't very well done. I think I made the same comment on both of them that I wished he had like an editor or somebody else to look at it to make it more clear. I think once I figured out Because like I started going through it, and I was just like, what the hell is going on? Like, this thing is all over the place. But then once I figured out that the way it was laid out, then it was much easier to follow. So I thought this rule book was much better than the two previous Tim Fowers games that we played. And the things that I did have to look up, it was mostly, so, you know, usually we talk about, hey, there's a lot of iconography and we had to look up which each icon meant. There are a lot of rooms in the game. And so we did have to go and look up, okay, this is exactly what it means. Like the lavatory, you know, you have those stealth tokens and you're just hiding in the bathroom. But I think, you know, once we read the blurb about that room, like we didn't have to look at it. Like it made sense. It was well written,
right,
on how it worked.
And then most of them, like, I think with the foyer, we were like, oh
yeah,
how does this one work? But it pretty much says it on the card. So,
and like the rule book does explain it well. And this one's much better laid out. So I liked this rule book a lot better than I liked the ones for Paperback and Fugitive. So, okay. And I think this game came out after both of those. So maybe he learned. Fugitive was after. So it was Paperback and then this and then Fugitive.
Take it back. He hasn't learned. Do better.
Yeah.
All right. Player interaction. Again, cooperative. So obviously you got to care what everyone's doing.
I mean, this game doesn't really, there's no checks on an alpha player in this game.
That's what I was going to say. With cooperative games, it's more discussion of how does it facilitate communication? And are there any checks on preventing someone from taking over the game? And I'd say there's not really much.
I think it just depends on who your players are. Yeah.
Right. But there are some that try to tamper it by, like, you know, like when we played Spirit Island, you kind of had your deck and they couldn't see the deck. So obviously you couldn't take over because you couldn't know everything that was going on.
Yeah. Or like. Yeah, like Kitchen Rush takes away the ability to really, it puts a time constraint, so you don't really have the time to alpha game.
So, I mean, some try it more than others. This one, I don't think there's really much that prevents it. So, have a good group. Don't have shitty friends.
Yeah, I think it really, I was just thinking, I mean, it would be your group. And if you've got like a good group that is also willing, I think to... Again, one of the things we like to do when you're given like a player is to play up to that player's ability. So when you're given that variable player card, right, like having fun with that and then realizing how you can use it. And again, I think with us, like we do. I mean, there was a point in the game where Eric was like, oh, BP's going to run off with all the loot, you know, like, because that's what she does. She's going to ditch us. But I think there is like that element like built in, like, ooh, is someone going to suddenly turn narc or traitor?
That's not variable player power. That's like the actual player's power.
you guys.
If there were a mechanic that lets you take the loot and run, you would have done it.
Yeah, it does specifically say in the rule book you're not allowed to drop loot, but you can trade loot between players.
Well, that's never gonna happen.
Side deals, huh? Yeah. You got the side hustle going on.
All right. Well, I guess that goes into, would you play it again, PP?
Yes.
You're already planning your next playthrough.
I am.
Yeah.
Again, I would never go on a heist with you.
I got us to the rooftop.
You ran out first. We're lucky there was still a helicopter there.
I mean, I found the stairs.
We're lucky the pilot came out last.
I took care of the guard on the first floor for you guys for a long time.
I blew a hole in the wall and took care of the other guard.
We're a team. Can't do it alone. All right, so Eric, would you play it again?
Yes, I'd play it again. This is up there for kind of like a fun, I don't know. Like we like so many cooperative games, it's hard to say, but this is up there. This is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before I answer, I have a question for BP.
Okay.
So BP, in the past, we've talked about using Pandemic mm-hmm. to introduce people to gaming. With the co-opiness and the ease in which it was teaching, would you rather teach somebody this or would you rather stay with Pandemic?
I, you know, as when we brought Pandemic up before, I was just thinking like, oh my gosh, this is way more fun than Pandemic. And, which is so hard for me to think because, right, we've loved Pandemic for so, so long. But this was a lot of fun. I feel like, okay. Oh, now I feel like I'm going to start getting into analytical mode here. Okay, so I feel like with pandemic, I got to talk this out. I'm a talker. Okay, so it's very teachable, but I feel like even with pandemic, the fault with both of these is that alpha player, and you can definitely alpha play, and you've sometimes even done it in pandemic legacy. This one, though, I just feel like, again, it feels like the group. There's something attractive about this and also its simplicity of layout almost, right? And what you're trying to do versus, which sounds really bad in this current time, so what you're trying to do in pandemic, right? Save the world and all of that. And I always keep thinking, like, someone mentioned something in Legos came up today. I was like, oh my God, that's one of our cities, right? In pandemic. But like, this one's so much fun. I'm going to lean towards this for now.
Well, I was going to say, I love pandemic, but I want this game.
I was going to say, was your answer, like, based on her response, were you going to be like, I've already sold pandemic and ordered this one?
I know.
I don't think I would sell pandemic just because.
No, once we finish the legacy, he's got a shadow box planned.
Well, but we still have the original pandemic.
I think I would start teaching a cooperative with one of his games, the Forbidden Desert, one of the Forbidden games.
Yeah.
To me, those are little bit lighter. And then I would go to this one over pandemic. Last time I was in a board game cafe, Snakes and Lattes, there was a group trying to learn pandemic next to us. And I was listening in. I was like, they're struggling real hard.
So they need a kiwi.
As a slightly more difficult, because even pandemic is, we consider it a good entry game, but it's still reasonably complicated.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, because the cubes can just be all over the place. So the complication comes in, how do we figure out this puzzle? And that's why I like this so much. I just think thematically,
even in terms of setup and stuff, figuring out how to set up the deck and put everything together. It was a struggle. That's why I think the Forbidden games are a little bit easier in that regard, because you just place the tiles down and then go.
Well, I guess somebody's got a birthday coming soon, but I was thinking more, it's a cooperative game and then there's an anniversary coming up.
That's true.
Or he could just buy the game like he buys all the games.
That's true. I could do that too. Yeah. I would 100% play this again.
That was 100%. A really long way to get to that conclusion.
I know, right?
Yeah. I wanted to foster a little bit of discussion.
Yeah. Other than is good.
Yeah. Is game are good.
All right. That was, according to my show notes, Burgle Bros.
There we go. We're going to fly off into the helicopter. Give us some helicopter sounds to send us off. If you have any recommendations for any heist games or cooperative games that you would like to hear our impressions on, the way we like to role play our cooperative games, send them our way. Or if you want to counteract any of our comments whatsoever, feel free to hit us up on the email at firstturntabletalk@gmail.com. Or Twitter, Instagram, we are at First Turn Cast. And the podcasting camel hanging his head out of the helicopter. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. Watch out below! Play more games. The Mastermind. And he can ignore lasers. Yes. I got a
goddamn gem.
Oh my God. I love this game.
If we're going to start this Brad Pitt fan podcast, I really need you guys to step up your Brad Pitt knowledge. Ba-ba-bum. Ba-ba-bum. Ba-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum. For a second, I thought I was doing Mission Impossible, and then it kind of turned into the Mortal Kombat